Welcome to the Animal Voices radio show here on 102.7 FM Co-op Radio, CFRO, in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, October 28th, 2011. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I'm joined here today by our guest co-host, Alyssa Ray. Hi, Alyssa.
Hi. Oh, there I am.
And our control room tech trainee, Morgan Ahoff, who is actually on his first day on the controls. So please have patience. Tara's away today. Welcome, everyone, and happy early World Vegan Day, which is happening next Monday on November 1st. On today's show, we will have an interview with Dr. Laura Genera, who is a political science professor at the University of British Columbia here in Vancouver, and also one of the organizers of a five-part speaker series entitled Bringing the Collective Together, Non-Human Animals, Animals, and Practice at the University. This is a series of public forums that will bring together scholars to discuss the ethics of animal research and will facilitate a conversation with the broader Vancouver community. The first of this series of forums was held yesterday at UBC, which I attended, and Dr. Genera is here to discuss with us how it went, our thoughts on the content matter that was raised, as well as to give us more information about the speaker series. Following that, our main feature for today's show is a segment called Speciesist Language, Words That Hurt, that Alyssa will be presenting to us. She will be talking about objectification and violence towards human and non-human animals. Plus, we will also have a discussion about peaceful alternatives to violent animal idioms. That's coming up in about 31 minutes. Very quickly before we move on, in my research for doing an upcoming review of Hannah Kaminsky's book Vegan Desserts, I made yet another decadent recipe this week for our people here in on Animal Voices to try out. They're coconut macaroons. Perhaps too decadent for you, Alyssa.
Oh, so sweet. So sweet. You know, they're lovely, but I could do for like maybe half the size.
Oh, well, I'll tell you, I've been eating maybe, I don't know, like 3-4 of those at time, which is why I need to give them away.
Give them away.
They were amazing, to me, at least. Very sweet, very delicious. In honor of World Vegan Day, which is marked annually on November 1st, I wanted to tell you about a project called the Faces of Vegan Project that vegan artist, photographer, gardener, and food blogger Lisa Weiger is working on. The Faces of Vegan Project is a collaborative video project that will show the world what vegans look like. The video will be made of a compilation of photos of real, genuine vegans. Imagine that. And all in our wonderful diversity, she says. So if you want to get involved and participate in this project, this is what you have to do. Number one, first you have to be a vegan, and then you just take a photo of yourself with something on it that says, I am vegan. It can be as simple as holding up a hand-lettered sign in front of yourself and taking a quick photo. If you want to get creative, you are encouraged to do so and have fun with it. If you take the photo at the beach, you can write, I am vegan, in the sand, or you can make the words, I am vegan, out of fruits and veggies or anything else. Lisa's website also suggests that you can write it on your forehead or in flowers. So make it fun or serious or whatever you want to do that represents you best as a vegan. You are asked to label your image file with the first and last name and make sure that your photo is clear and well lit, and also that it is not photoshopped at all. Then send your image to lisaviger@yahoo.com. So I'm going to spell that for you. It's lisaviger@yahoo.com. And if you need these instructions all over again, you can go to our website to find the details there, which is at www.lisaviger.com/faces. It's also on our website, animalvoices.org. What do you think, Alyssa? Are you going to do it?
Yes. I was wondering, cool. though, I just kind of had a flash here, trying to keep our listeners in mind, and I wonder if we've ever defined veganism on a recent show.
Why don't you go ahead? I know we have, but sure. Why don't you do a recap of what veganism is?
Well, I'll do my best. So a vegan is someone who abstains from using any kind of animal products.
As much as possible.
And practical. It's not about purity. And also not only animal products that people eat, but animals exploited for entertainment, animals that are tested on for various products that people use, and even clothing, so leather and fur. And that's, I think...
And what I like to call it is it's doing the least harm.
Yeah.
So as you said, it's not about purity. It's
not
about doing the least harm. So great definition.
Yeah.
And so don't forget, we here at Vancouver Cooperative Radio are still actively conducting our biannual membership drive. And it's that time of the year again where we ask our listeners, that's you, to pledge your support for the radio show and the radio station in order to keep our show on the air. Vancouver Cooperative Radio 102.7 FM CFRO is a volunteer-run, listener-supported radio station. And we do need your financial support to keep up the programming of the weekly Animal Voices show. Last week, I shared with you all my story of why I decided to get involved with Co-op Radio and what it means to me. And this week I'd like to ask you, Alyssa, to share with us what Co-op Radio means to you.
Well, Co-op Radio is the voice of the people, and that's the most important issue to me. I'm like, cooperatives are true to who I am, and I try my best to live by my values, and I try not to support big corporations. And of course, Co-op has no doesn't rely on commercials to pay our bills. We rely on listeners.
That's a really good point to make, and that's why we need your support.
Yeah, exactly. And just being a member of an organization like this is just really fulfilling to me. Just innately, I know I don't listen to all the shows, but I know that any time I tune in, just a random time, I'm going to hear something that's unique and not available on the rest of the wavelengths. So I really, really want to keep Co-op going, and I'm very proud of my monthly sustainer membership.
And having said that, that you, whenever you tune in, there's always something really unique and interesting. I totally do agree with that. I'm actually on the programming committee as one of my volunteer duties at Co-op Radio, which means that I get to listen to and review different shows that we have on the air here. And yeah, it's not just Animal Voices, that which I do encourage you to support. It's not just Animal Voices. We have a whole range of different shows that are quite unique. We just had the show Pedal Revolution, which is a cycling show.
Nice.
Now, after this is Radio Eco Shock, which is an environmentally themed talk show. Lots of different music shows of all different ethnicities.
Yeah.
Very, very interesting programming. So if you do appreciate the work that we do here every week at Animal Voices to bring you original quality programming on the topics of current animal issues and the vegan lifestyle, please show us your support by making a donation to us at Animal Voices at Co-op Radio, because we do rely on your donations to keep the show on the air. To make a donation of $5, $10, or $20, or whatever you can afford, simply go to cooperadio.org and click on Donate Now. And remember to indicate on your donation that it's going towards Animal Voices. And if you're in Canada and make a donation, we are a charitable organization, so your donations are tax deductible. Every little bit helps, so we thank you for your assistance.
Co-op Radio's Fall Member Drive, October 14th to 28th. Join us for 2 weeks of special programming featuring the best that Co-op Radio has to offer. In-depth interviews, alternative music, local arts and culture. Call in, become a member, and join one of Canada's oldest community radio stations. Call 604-684-8494. That's Co-op Radio's Fall Member Drive, October 14th to 28th. Join us.
Co-op Radio's Full Member Drive, October 14th to the 28th. Join us for 2 weeks of special programming featuring the best that Co-op Radio has to offer. In-depth interviews, alternative music, local arts and culture. Call in, become a member, and join one of Canada's oldest community radio stations. Call 604-684-8494. That's Co-op Radio's Full Member Drive, October 14th to 28th. Join us.
You're listening to 102.7 Co-op Radio. That's on your FM dial. And we're broadcasting from Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and of course on unceded Coast Salish territory. And this is the Animal Voices show. And I have some upcoming animal-friendly and vegan events for our listeners. The first one is upcoming this Saturday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. All day long, there will be a fundraiser for the Vancouver Humane Society called Give a Hand and Take a Seat. So a Vancouver patio furniture store, Furniture Direct Sales, has organized a fundraiser called Give a Hand, Take a Seat for the VHS. Up to 1,000 patio cushions will be for sale by donation. The buyer names the price. All proceeds go to VHS. The Tim Hortons Community Cruiser will be offering free coffee and donuts from 8 until 10, and a free Mario's Gelato will be given out with every cushion sale. VHS volunteers and staff will be on site to answer any questions the public may have about animal issues and their programs. So, yeah.
Vancouver Humane Society does really good work. So yeah. If you do need some patio furniture, that would be the time to get it. That's tomorrow.
It's not something that people necessarily think about in the rainy winter season, but it's the time for deals and help out the VHS. So the next day, Saturday, October 30th, from noon until 4, it's CATCA's World Animal Day Children Animal Awareness Artwork Exhibition. CATCA is, of course, Campaigns Against the Cruelty to Animals, and this exhibition will be taking place in New Westminster at the Centennial Community Center next to the Canada Games Pool on 6th Avenue. And so a little bit about this event. World Animal Day animal awareness events are celebrated in 64 countries worldwide, educating and creating awareness about the importance to respect and care for the animals. CATCA will have an information table there at the event. For this occasion, they're inviting the children to come visit with their parents and do wear nice animal costumes. There will be a couple of cool prizes for the best and cutest animal costume. This is a public event, and all of the general public are invited to participate. Refreshments and veggie snacks will be served. Donations for the animals will be accepted there. That sounds like a great pre-Halloween activity for the kidlets. And let's see, on Saturday, November 5th, I think we'll be talking, it's in exactly 2 weeks, it's going to be the inaugural Vegan Prom in Vancouver. Very exciting. So this event will happen on November 5th, like I said, Yay. Saturday, 8 p.m. to midnight. We're very excited, and everyone, of course, needs to get their tickets very quickly.
You have to get them in advance.
Yes. Yeah. And so I'll tell you a little bit about what Vegan Prom is. It's a chance for vegans, the vegan curious, and vegan allies to get dressed up so they can dance and nibble and drink the night away. There'll be a buffet of finger foods, a cash bar, photo booth, raffle, and a way to leave anonymous notes for your secret vegan crushes. You're guaranteed to have a great time, isn't it? I think it's kind
of... I think it's going to be fun.
So All in good fun. So the tickets are on sale now at Carmivore, which is in New Westminster, 610 Columbia Street. And at Nice Shoes, our vegan and ethical shoe and accessory store in Vancouver. That's 3568 Fraser Street, 21st and Fraser. And also now Edible Flowers, which is a new vegan bakery at Arbutus and West Broadway in Kitsilano. Tickets are only $15 a piece, cash only. This event is adults. It's 19 plus. You can order online also now. You don't have to get the tickets in person at one of those wonderful businesses. You can order them online from the Vegan Prom website, veganpromyvr.com. And you can check out more information there. This event is co-sponsored by Animal Voices Radio, and we will be there, of course.
Thank you.
And if you have any animal-friendly events that you'd like to have announced on the show, please do email us the details at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. We'd be happy to promote your event, or you can post it on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver.
Thank you for that, Alyssa. Our guest for today's first main segment is Dr. Laura Genera, who is a political science professor at the University of British Columbia and also one of the organizers of a five-part speaker series entitled Bringing the Collective Together, Non-Human Animals, Animals, and the Practice at and practice at the university. The first session of the speaker series, named The Ethics of Life, Use, and Care, took place yesterday at UBC's Green College. And Dr. Genera is here with us today to discuss with us the series and her thoughts on how yesterday's meeting went. Hello, Dr. Genera, and welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the show. So yesterday's first session was delivered to a packed room and featured two presentations by academic scholars Rod Preece, who is a professor emeritus of political philosophy at Wilfrid Laurier University, and Jody Castricano, who we have had on the show before, and she is a professor of critical studies at UBC Okanagan. There was also a short presentation by Willard Woody Sparrow of the Musqueam Nation, and the session's moderator was David Fraser, who is a zoologist in UBC's animal welfare program. So quite a good roster of qualified people to speak on this issue. Before we get to the content of the session, I'd like to start by asking you, as one of the organizers of this program series, how it even came to fruition, especially on a campus that has, until now, acted very defensively and secretly in criticisms towards its stance on animal research. So how is it that this speaker series was ignited and organized to happen on the UBC campus?
Yes, good question. Well, UBC is actually many things. There are many things going on at UBC, many people thinking in many different ways. And I teach this speaker series really had its genesis in a class that I teach in the political science department called Political Theory and Non-Human Life. And political theory, that is what I am. I'm a political theorist. We generally ask how humans should live together. And so it really, as an enterprise, political theory is very anthropocentric. So I designed the course to try to get us to disrupt political theory and also ourselves in the settled ways that we think about life, about species, and about power. And so we undertook readings in this class on various kinds of relations between humans and animals, including hunter-animal relations among First Nations people, factory farming, the slaughterhouse, animals and humans in the lab. And we were thinking a lot about a modern form of power that emerges in the West in the 19th century that tends to be called biopolitical power or biopower. And it's a kind of power that states started using about 150 years ago that is geared towards managing populations of life. And the concept really describes the modern idea of how human populations exist as populations and their health needs to be managed. So we want to produce a population of healthy bodies. And so the state got very involved in managing bodies, and this can be seen as quite a double-edged sword. And this idea of biopower helps us understand the modern attitude towards animals, in fact, as in the last two centuries we've really altered the way that we live with animals. And so, for one thing, biopower helps us understand how we use animals as material to serve the management of the human population. But also it helps us see how we produce animals as populations themselves whose bodies are to be managed, you know, in lab use and factory farming and so forth. And so with my class, we were discussing these issues, and as we were discussing them together, we started hearing about questions that the activists at UBC were putting to the UBC administration. And as political theorists, we were reflecting then on animals at the university, and we discovered that we had many questions that really required input from scientists, from people in the social sciences, and people in humanities. And then the wonderful Green College at UBC put out its call for proposals for speaker series. And Green College is wonderful because it provides a home for scholars who want to ask, you know, unorthodox questions, unusual questions off the beaten track about how we do scholarship and how we perform at the university, and, you know, difficult questions about general cultural ideas. And so my students and I wanted to propose our idea for a speaker series to Green College, but we really needed to collaborate with scientists, and we connected with zoologists at the Animal Welfare Program at UBC. And we're way at the northern tip of this enormous campus, and they're way at the southern end, and so we traipsed down to the southern end and met them, and they were a revelation to us. They were more ready than us to generate this conversation on campus, and so they've been very key to helping us make the series a reality.
That's a great explanation. Thanks for that, and it's interesting to hear how it actually all came together. So I'd like to talk about some of the content of the presentations. There mm-hmm. were two main presentations, and the first one was by Professor Rod Preece of Wilfrid Laurier University in Ontario, who is the author of a book called Animals and Nature. He gave a reflective talk and a good introduction of the historical roles of animals roles and how those roles changed in our human society throughout the ages to those of which now deem human superiority over all others. I liked how he was able to walk us through the history from the beginning of time, basically, to how man regards animals in the present day, which we're actually going to be talking about more in the show later on. And this is the current and nagging theme of man's current relationship with animals, which is we're better than them, therefore our needs trump theirs, and so it's okay to harm animals for the betterment of our fellow humans. What are your thoughts on this conclusive statement?
I found it a very compelling argument because it was a good way to start the series. It really destabilized us. And so it shook us to the core in terms of the assumptions we tend to have on a daily basis, and really threw us back on ourselves to think about why we think the way that we do, why we have the assumptions that we do. And I thought it was effective the way that he argued that there is no obviously legitimate hierarchy among species that justifies one species dominating other species. So he talked about how humans have human attributes and capacities. Whales have whale attributes and capacities. Cats have cat attributes and capacities.
Humans have opposable thumbs.
Humans have opposable thumbs, which we really like about ourselves.
We are superior.
That's right. So his point was that there's difference across species, but this is not an obvious ethical justification for domination, for one species to interfere in other species fulfilling their own ends, because his point was every species has its own ends to fulfill.
Exactly.
And so we should question an ethics that says it's obviously okay for one species to interfere with the ends of others. And really what he was arguing is that this has been an exercise of power rather than ethics.
You know, I liked what he talked about. He talked about how scientists use what's called reasonable impartiality, which is that they think that equality is admirable, but there are times to deviate from these principles, and therefore experimentation is a justified belief in Western culture. He said that, however, to be impartial in this context is to actually be partial to the researchers sharing the same belief system as them. That's what reasonable impartiality is. He says this impartiality, in quotes, represents the disadvantage instead of the advantage, rather than leveling the playing ground. If they were truly going to be impartial by leveling the playing ground, they would be favoring the disadvantage, the animals. And
right.
I thought that was an excellent point that he made.
Yes. I mean, I think, you know, what he helped us to see was that the way that our institutions make decisions about how we can use animals, those decisions are embedded in a broader culture, and the culture itself has certain values and perspectives that we might actually want to interrogate. And one member of the audience raised the issue of the Western cultural fear of death or anxiety about death, which is so culturally pervasive, and it is quite distinctive to modern Western culture. And, you know, I think Professor Preece, he was very effective in getting us to see that a culture is historical. It's one way of organizing meaning, one way of valuing things. And we have
and
that.
And we're very embedded into it.
Exactly.
We are people. We are about culture.
Exactly. So when we believe we're being impartial, in fact, we are embedded in our prevailing cultural values, and we just may not recognize that. And so, you know, our prevailing cultural values lead us to say that we have a responsibility even to serve humans through research on animals and an ethical right to do it. But Professor Preece is inviting us to step back and say, you know, what exactly are we trying to serve and why? How did we get to this kind of thinking in the first place?
So Jody Castricano, professor of critical studies at UBC Okanagan, then gave a talk on the role of animals and how we perceive animals amongst us. She also noted that the university has now brought us together to talk about these issues and that it can't ignore the issues any longer. I'm curious as to what your thoughts is on this issue, that UBC is finally paying attention to the fact that this is something that needs to be raised and opened up for debate. And I'm wondering if you've seen the press release that has gone out just this morning on what UBC has now released to the public. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do. I have seen it.
Okay, which I think is just perfect for today's discussion. I'm going to be talking about this later on our news this afternoon, but UBC has now finally released information about the numbers and types of animals that they've been researching on. So taking that, where do we go from here? What do you think it will take for institutions like UBC to change? And I think change is happening. What do you think?
Yeah, I was very interested to see that press release today. I would say that UBC has been paying attention all along to this issue.
For sure.
There's a national quasi-regulatory body called the Canadian Council for Animal Care, and it basically gives universities rules to follow. And UBC follows the protocols, and UBC has been dutifully reporting this to the public. What our series is saying is that there are deeper questions to ask, though, than just does UBC comply with the existing protocols.
And that's been their defense as well. We're complying with the protocol,
exactly.
So nothing's wrong.
Exactly.
And, you know, you're an academic institution that is supposed to pride itself on initiating thought processes.
Exactly. Go beyond,
please.
Yes. So I'd actually like to refer to one of my colleagues, Max Cameron from Political Science. He's currently holding a series on campus called "It's a Discussion About about Practical Wisdom," which is a way of exercising practical deliberation to answer insightfully the question we face every day: what is to be done? And you know, when I reflect on Max's series, I see that our question is: do our institutions do an adequate job of getting us to reflect insightfully, carefully about what we are doing at the university? And there may very well be, you know, a whole lot of human diseases, for example, that we want to target with all the powers of science and technology that we have. But are we confident that we have deliberated adequately as a democratic public about doing this and about how we're doing this?
So we just have a couple of minutes left. I would like you to let us know, if you could tell us, what the upcoming speaker sessions in this series will entail and when will they be held?
Yes. So the series is, we feel it is incomplete and it's a start. Something we hope that...
It was a good intro yesterday, which is what I would call it. It's starting from the beginning.
Exactly. And when we finish the series, we won't be done by any stretch of the imagination. You know, we're just starting to bring people together. There's a challenge in bringing people together at the university, and that scholars from the sciences and social sciences and humanities, we all talk through jargon, through complicated vocabularies. We can't always fully understand each other, but we need to talk to each other, and I hope that the series is a beginning at UBC for modeling some kind of new format for ongoing deliberation. And so we have three more panels coming up, and at these three more panels we will be discussing at the next one who benefits from animal research, and we'll be talking about human benefit as well as benefits that are derived by non-human animals from research. And then the next two panels are focused on how we use non-human animals at the university in the broader setting of a democracy. And so we'll be thinking about the issue of regulation in a democratic society, how other democratic societies, in fact, deliberate about the use of animals. And we'll discover that in other jurisdictions, other approaches are taken, and they may be something that Canada needs to reflect on.
Well, thank you, Dr. Genera, for coming on the show today to speak to us about the speaker series at UBC on animal research ethics entitled Bringing the Collective Together, Non-Human Animals, Animals, and Practice at the University. And I just want to let people know to find out about the upcoming sessions. I believe the next one's going to be in February. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. February 1st. And all of our panels are open to the public.
And to find out see the events calendar, you just go to www.greencollege.ca. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You are listening to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 102.7 FM, CFRO, Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
Thank you for that, Morgan. So I'm bringing us today's news, and as I was mentioning just in the interview just now, breaking news today is the University of British Columbia has released a press statement to the public that I was just made aware of this morning right before the show. Thank you to my friend Noemi for emailing that to me and urgently phoning me about it. That's really appreciated. So this is, I would say it's a major breakthrough for the university. I'm just because I just got this, I'm just going to quickly read the information that I have. And President Stephen Toop from UBC has addressed the issue of animal research in the past and, you know, reiterating the university's commitment to the highest standards in humane animal care, as he says, and stating that UBC is striving for greater transparency in this area. Mm-hmm. After consultations and careful consideration, today they are releasing information on the categories of species and number of animals involved in research at UBC. This is a significant step for the university, and they do claim that as well, and one worth taking, they say. They believe that making this information available will help inform the ongoing public dialogue on the sensitive issue, which I completely agree with. So on their website, they do have a website that they have set up for animal research at UBC, which is www.animalresearch.ubc.ca. And on that website, they have released some information. Alyssa, are you as surprised at this as I am? You are on the air.
I am.
We were just talking about it really briefly before the show when I just found out about it.
Yes, I'm surprised. Honestly, I don't really have much to say, though. Because I don't know. I'm not going to comment.
Well, let me tell you this. they have released the information about the types of animals and the numbers of animals that have been involved.
Oh,
so
wow.
The information published today reveals that 211,764 animals have been involved in 982 research protocols in 2010, last year. Rodents, fish, reptiles, and amphibians account for nearly 97% of the animals. Fewer than 2% are mammals other than rodents, and 1.2% are birds. So there's information that is finally been made public.
Wow.
One other thing that I'd like to point out that they would like to point out and do point out is that they say that 68% of the animals were subjected to procedures that caused only minor or no discomfort, while 31, it says animals, I think it means percent, while 31% of animals, so 31% of 211,000, that's nearing 70,000 animals, were involved in procedures that are thought to cause moderate to severe pain, and the animals were given anesthetics. All research entailing pain for the animals must include an improved pain management plan, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
I wonder if this is going to make mainstream news.
I think it is. I bet you it'll be on the front of the Vancouver Sun or the Province, at least. And I think it's a major, major news breakthrough and breakthrough for the university and breakthrough for the organization Stop UBC Animal Research that has been pushing for this type of information to be released. Mm-hmm. And in the past, the university has refused to release it. They have cited their Privacy of Information Act, in which they didn't have to release this information, as far as I know, as of yet. So I think that perhaps they're seeing that it is perhaps to their best interest at this time, with public pressure raising, to release this type of information. I encourage everyone to go to that website, www.animalresearch.ubc.ca, to find out more. Next in news, also big for this week, is Toronto has banned shark fin. Toronto City Council has voted to ban the sale of shark fin in the city. That just happened this week. And the ban will outlaw the possession, sale, trade, and distribution of shark fins or their derivative products. So this proposal passed easily at council by a vote of 38-4, which I think is also excellent news. Toronto is a huge metropolitan area, and that's going to actually save a lot of sharks. But not only that, I think there's going to be the effect of other municipalities now following in their footsteps, and because Toronto is a leader, they're taking lead in setting a precedent, I think. For those who don't know, we have featured this topic on the show before. You can actually search it on our website, animalvoices.org, shark fin. Shark fins are used in a soup that is often served at traditional Chinese weddings, and they are killed inhumanely and thrown into the ocean alive after their fins are sliced off. So those who oppose the ban say the soup is a traditional dish, and they insist that the sharks are killed humanely, but we know that not to be the case. Unfortunately, before the vote, Mayor Rob Ford said he didn't think it was the city's responsibility to ban the sale of shark fins, and that he wouldn't support the motion. He says, you know what he said? He said, "It's been going on for so long, I don't know why it's an issue now." Like, what do you think of that kind of I think that's just such an ignorant response, especially for a mayor of such a major city as, oh, we've been doing it for ages. It's tradition. So who cares about it now?
Tradition and history will never be an excuse.
Nothing. Exactly. We're going to be talking about that soon.
Yeah. Well, it's like excusing, you know, slavery or racism or homophobia or sexism as, oh, it's the way it's always been done. Like, no, that doesn't fly.
And shame on the mayor for saying that, the mayor of Toronto. Finally, I just want to add that 100 protesters showed up outside City Hall claiming a ban would hurt the restaurant industry. Interesting that there's protesters on the other side, where it's usually the animal activists that are the protesters. So that's what I have for today's news. And now on to you, Alyssa.
On to me. Okay. So this segment is called Speciesist Language, Words That Hurt. And it's a little bit of a continuation of the piece that I worked on last week, which was about speciesism and sexism. So we'll be covering some of those issues today. I think today's segment we've decided is just going to be more of a discussion, because there's really just so much to talk about.
We have a lot to talk about.
We do. We do. And I enjoy talking to you, Allison.
I enjoy talking to you, Alyssa. And, I enjoy talking to our millions of listeners as well, by the way.
Millions. Oh, my goodness. Now I'm frozen with fear. I can't talk.
our two listeners, Alyssa.
Oh, okay. That's much better. It's like we're all cozy around a fireplace. Okay. So basically, the segment that Allison, the interview that you just did, talked a lot about the big picture of speciesist issues.
I learned some stuff yesterday, I have to say. I mean, I've read a lot. There's a book called, I think it's called Ethics and Vegetarianism, that I've read, that has essays in it that sort of talks about the beginning of time, of where it all came into play, what human nature, what humans' relationship was with animals way at the beginning of time, thousands of years ago, and then how that changed.
Right. So yeah, it must have been when we started, domesticating animals.
For agriculture,
relationship to nature, I think, fundamentally changed, and seeing nature as something that can be subjugated and that's here just for us to exploit. I think there was more of a balance and an egalitarianism before that point.
Well, something that the professor Priest brought up yesterday was that it hasn't always been this way. In fact, Homo sapiens from thousands and thousands of years ago would have thought that this idea that humans are superior over animals, it would have been a preposterous idea to them, because way back then, they used to live in harmony with nature, and that included animals. We're all animals on this earth. It was just until they decided to, as you said, domesticate them or to hunt the wild animals for food, was when it became their side versus our side, or our side versus their side.
And even in some indigenous cultures, surviving and hunting animals has been, I don't know, I guess they say they revere their spirit, or it's still seen as part of the natural balance, and they would use every part, and I don't know, I kind of see a value and a balance there, that, you know, it's helped us be where we are today, but I don't think we necessarily need to be there
And I think we're very far removed from that.
Oh, no, absolutely. I'm just saying, like, I don't know if that was, like, them versus animals necessarily, or sometimes, I don't know, survival is a whole different category of ethics. Like, you can't really bring that into the conversation. So I've been reading, again, from this book, Animals and Women, Feminist Theoretical Explorations, and especially work by Joan Dunier. And I have not yet read her book called Speciesism, but I have read a few of her essays. And this one that I'm taking a lot from today is called Sexist Words, Speciesist Roots. And I just wanted to just read a little passage here. So, linguistic practice, like other human practices, is even more deeply speciesist than sexist. Humans, after all, have a verbal monopoly. Our language necessarily reflects a human-centered viewpoint more completely than a male-centered one. Considered in relation to the plight of non-human animals, Adrienne Rich's words of feminist insight express a terrible absolute. This is the oppressor's language. Speciesist language has far from trivial consequences. Although non-human animals cannot discern the contempt in the words that disparage them, this contempt legitimates their oppression. Like sexist language, speciesist language fosters exploitation and abuse. As feminist philosopher Stephanie Ross has stated with regard to women, oppression does not require the awareness or cooperation of its victims. So I think that just brings to light, like, even like you and I, Allison, on the show and everyone, we're using this language that is oppressing animals and that was created in sort of a patriarchal world, that worldview where, you know, we dominate nature and dominate animals. And I think it even people who are aware and compassionate people still use language that really hurts and denigrates animals, animal kind. And
I have to say, I'm guilty of doing that too. It's
no,
sometimes,
for sure.
You know, it's our language, as you mentioned before, it's idioms that we're just used to.
Yeah. And it's just about, I think, bringing awareness to this fact,
yeah,
and doing the best we can to not be violent with our words. I think just as other terms, you know, sexist terms or racist slurs or, you know, homophobic talk is you know, not respected, or and there's more consciousness being arise to how we shouldn't be insulting people with our words. It's not just our choice. They're not just words. They're never just words. It ends up hurting people, and even if it's just a joke
words
or whatever.
Hurt.
Yeah, they do. And so one of the key things is, well, the humans versus animals, as if we're not animals. That's kind of the, like, basis.
I like the term non-human animals versus human animals.
Right.
We're all animals.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I try to use that as well, because it's just seeing animals as other helps us just excuses our exploitation of them. And the other one that really gets me is calling animals or other animals it, as seeing other creatures as something versus someone.
I have to say that I've even seen people, or I guess organizations even, that have written papers or articles or whatnot who are sympathetic to animals, that they call animals it in their articles.
Yeah, it's
which I noticed right away, and I can understand if it's a standard in journalism or whatnot when you're reading a newspaper, but when it's an animal organization that's calling the animal an it, or if it's someone who is being quoted who's talking about how much they love this animal and then call it the animal it, like I see that as a juxtaposition.
It's
of
a thing.
You know,
yeah, it's,
you
it's...
love this animal, but it's an it to you.
Yeah.
One point that I that comes to mind is when people talk about their dogs, like they're members of their family, and then they refer to them as it,
a thing. Yeah,
it.
And they
do you know what you're saying? Your dog's an it, but you love your dog, and your dog's a member of your family.
Yeah, it goes back to the point of that animals are property. I mean, that's basically what
it's
about.
And it objectifies them. And when
you say that
words hurt, I think that is a good example of how words hurt animals.
Yeah.
You're calling the animal an it.
Yeah.
What is that doing for the way that we think of animals
and then
treat them?
And not only that, one of the words that bothers me is on that theme is pets. I don't. It's just. It's like they exist for our comfort, for us to pet them, or something. And I much prefer the term companion animals. And I don't think, like, just even people talking about buying pets, or just owning them, saying they're a pet owner. Ugh, that really bothers me.
Companion animal guardian.
Yeah,
that's very PC.
You know, it is, and it's kind of seems whatever. Yeah, like. Too politically correct, maybe, but no, it's just owning a pet to me, just owning your animal. It's like owning your friend. I don't do that. And the other kind of terms like circus animals, lab animals, racehorses.
Farm animals, that one really gets me.
Yeah, like as if they exist just for that. Circus animals, like it's just they're born to perform for us. That's just what they do, and it just excuses all the abuse. Even the word domestication, it's a euphemism basically for captivity and subjugation and forced breeding. It's domestication. It sounds so nice. It's like, oh, we just tamed them and they became our friend and they want to be here. And no.
That's a really good point. There's another word, and I can't remember what it is, that people use instead of hunting. And I just can't remember. Another euphemism, when we're speaking about euphemisms.
Oh, yeah.
And like the dolphin drive or instead of the dolphin hunt. I can't quite remember what I want to say here.
Oh, but there's many.
Lots of them. Yeah.
Like even word livestock.
Livestock. Exactly.
That always has bothered me.
They're animals.
They're property.
Cattle.
Just livestock. They're just walking around, but
cattle
they don't.
Versus cows, and yeah. I think you're going to be talking
or
about
even,
that.
Or even words like beef and chicken pig. Like, I eat beef.
Bacon.
I eat chicken. It's not chickens.
I make a point, especially when I'm talking to meat eaters.
Yeah.
Oh, you're eating a chicken?
Yeah,
eating, oh, or I don't eat cow. I don't eat cows.
Cows.
Yeah, I don't eat. I'll say I don't eat cows.
Yeah,
I don't eat chickens.
Yeah,
I don't eat pigs.
It's just one uncountable noun. Just like
that's
you're,
what they
you're
are
taking
to me.
A
they
bite out of one big piece of beef. Like what do people like? It makes that disconnect. It makes people be able to eat the flesh and secretions of animals when they're labeled as.
I very
just
much agree with that. I think too
thing.
When children find out, and I've read these stories and heard of them so many times. When the children that become vegetarians, it's because they asked, what am I eating? You're eating beef. Oh, what is it made out of? Oh, it's made out of a cow. What?
Oh.
And then because the word beef meant nothing to them. The word cow means something to them. The cow is in their storybooks or, you know, or they've seen cows at the petting zoo or whatnot. They can relate to a cow.
Yeah. And we call their dead flesh a carcass or meat. We don't call it a corpse. That's just a human-only term. Just on that, just a little story. My boss, just on kind of that disconnect, my boss, like, said that there was her cat was in front of the oven and just kind of, like really into the oven, like, before she went to bed. And she's like, okay, that's kind of weird. And then she went to bed and woke up. And I don't know, the next time someone turned the oven on, there was a smell of, like, you know, mouse. Cooking mouse,
oh
like dead
gosh.
Mouse. And I just looked at her and I was like, well, you eat animal flesh, not you eat dead animals. What's so weird about that? She's like, oh, the smell was so gross. I'm like, yeah, because it's a dead animal. Like, and you know, but it's just different.
I have a story to tell if you want to hear another really gross story about that. Okay. So here's a secret I have. I have a brand on my leg. You know how cows get branded, but it was my choice to get that done. And when I got that done, basically the guy was, his name was Bear, by the way, speaking of animals, he was using a blowtorch to draw this symbol into my leg. It's like a tattoo. And the person who was there with me, she's actually photographing it for an article I was writing. She basically wanted to puke, she said, because she said it smelled like a barbecue. There you go. It's okay if it's a barbecue and if it's a cow, but not if it's a human piece of leg burning.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's
so that's the gross out for today.
Thanks for sharing.
Sure.
And then, of course, like, why is murder only human, but it's seen as, you know, slaughter for other animals? Or the term, instead of calling something a slaughterhouse, they're moving away from that and they're calling them processing facilities.
Oh,
isn't that nice? Just processing. So, of course, this connects with sexism, and animals are often, you know, denigrated and subjugated and seen as less than human, and females are seen as less than males, and that idea is perpetuated by likening women to animals. And which shouldn't be an insult, because animals really aren't less than human, but because of this mentality we have of, like, man with a capital M versus nature, or man versus animals, it ends up being an insult. I hope it isn't one day when we all raise consciousness.
Right.
But so, like, women say no to the pornography industry or starting to star in pornographic films are called fresh meat. And men who are into, are categorized by being into different parts. They'll talk about being a thigh man or a breast man or, you know, something like that. Like, it's just a part. It's not a being. It's not an individual. It's all the same kind of language used to perpetuate these terrible ideas. And of course, that makes things like sexual abuse and rape so much more prevalent and so much more accepted in mass culture. It's not very long ago that women didn't have, you know, the right to vote even. And then, you know, before that, we're just seen as basically only there to produce babies and cook and clean. And like those ideas.
Again, objectification.
Yeah, exactly. Or just seen as basically like property without ability to think or, you know, feel pain and.
You know, it was said at the talk yesterday, and that analogy was brought up about women, and they only had the right to vote, I believe it was 1918 or something like that, is, yeah, obviously a lot has changed since then, and that change is going to happen for the animals. It's coming, but, you know, in current day society, we're definitely not there.
Well, no, and sometimes though we think we are, but I think that until all forms of oppression, which are rooted in this othering, until we're all recognized as beings that feel and think and have their own inherent value and rights.
Well, like, there's the Gandhi quote, right, that says, you know, a nation can be judged by the way it treats its animals.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. It's all the same, and like you can't just fight one form alone. I wanted to talk now a little bit about insults that are commonly used to refer to women, and of course, women say or feminists say like I want to be treated as a human being, not a mere animal, which is. That's an oppressive idea right there.
I'd like to be treated at, like a wild dolphin swimming in the ocean.
Well, unless you're in Taiji and you're being hunted.
Swimming freely in the ocean, yes, not being hunted. No bloodbath, please.
Yes. Well, I'd like to be respected, and I'd like other animals to be respected as well. You know, I don't see someone calling me an animal, you know, shouldn't be an insult. But it is. So things like cow... Calling women a cow, like to be like fat and dull, or a dog, like you're just totally ugly.
I mean, I love dogs,
and they're beautiful.
Most dogs all dogs are beautiful.
Who thinks of dogs as ugly? Like,
where did that term even come from? I mean, people love dogs.
Yeah, or bitch, which is an interesting one, which I hadn't really thought about because everyone knows, you know, that's a female dog. But why is that an insult? Well, I have some information for you. Among recommended methods for breeding bulldogs, the American Kennel Club's, I'm reading from Joan Dunier's essay here. Among recommended methods for breeding bulldogs, the American Kennel Club's official magazine includes holding the bitch in the proper position by her legs or by straps and assisting the male in penetration. Breeders subject the bulldog bitch to this ordeal because through inbreeding, they have afflicted her breed with characteristics that preclude natural mating, a low front and high rear. And then they go on to tell a disgusting story about how one of them couldn't breathe, and they continued on. So in light of, you know, breeding, now we understand why bitch is such an insult. And of course, I wanted to talk about pigs as well, how they're not actually filthy. They're not actually greedy. They actually don't overeat.
And they're really smart.
And they're not, yeah, they're totally really smart. And they're also matriarchal and cooperative. So the term male chauvinist pig, not sure why that is a good insult for men that are...
I love pigs.
Jerks.
I have a very strong affinity for pigs. So I guess if someone called me a pig, I would not be insulted whatsoever. I'd be honored.
Yeah, no, me too. And so it's just like being aware of these attitudes. And I just wanted to just read a little, I don't think I have time though.
Darn. You can hurry.
Okay. Mm-hmm. No, I don't think I have time. But
thank you so much for that. That did go by fast, didn't it?
It did, you know, 20 minutes.
We can do a part two
we
next
have a lot to
time.
Say. Part three. So what is next? Oh, I guess.
You're up again.
We're going to close the show. That's a whole lot of talking. You have been listening to Animal Voices Radio Show on 102.7 FM, Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Our show next week will have a feature interview with Ethologist Mark Bekov on the morality of animals. He's the author of a book called Wild Justice, The Moral Lives of Animals, and he will be appearing for a talk in Vancouver coming up on November 17th. Oh, exciting. Mm-hmm. Remember to sign up for our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. We have over 400 fans now. Please help us get it to 500. You can also join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. And please do send us your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. And remember to check out our website, animalvoices.org, where you can get information about our past shows and download the podcasts from there. And remember, it's Vancouver Co-op Radio's biannual membership drive right now. If you appreciate the work we do, that we do here every week at Animal Voices to bring you original, quality programming on the topics of current animal issues and the vegan lifestyle, please show us your support by making a monetary donation to us at Animal Voices at Co-op Radio, because we do rely on your donations to keep this show on the air. To make a donation of $5, $10, $20, whatever you can afford, simply go to co-opradio.org and click on Donate Now. And remember to indicate on your donation that it's going towards Animal Voices. And if you're in Canada and make a donation of at least $25, your donations are tax deductible. Every little bit helps. We thank you so very much for your assistance. We'll be leaving you today with the song called One Species by animal rights band True Nature. It's rather apt. We've been talking a lot about speciesist issues today. Thank you for listening. And remember, be kind to the animals. Stop support.